Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamon.
Welcome back from a long break in the Single High Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. Coming to you here at the end of July, the very last day of July. I am Frank Vitovich, one of your hosts, and I am joined, as always, by the president of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club and video analyst at Irish Sports Daily, Mr. Greg Flamon. How are we doing, Greg? It's been a minute or two.
So, it's been a little bit getting back into the swing of things. Fall camp started. Everyone's fired up about that. We've got a lot of shows going on Irish Sports Daily. I'm hitting Hustle Show with Mr. Jamie Uyama. It's going really well. Just back from vacation. Feeling energized.
Where was vacation?
It's kind of like a staycation for us. We don't actually leave.
Gotcha.
Really, like, I mean, we leave the county, but we don't go far. It's like 30 minutes away. We go to Newport Beach every year. It's great. I've been going since I was a little kid. I can't remember a summer when I wasn't there. So, I love going, and we continue the tradition with our kids. So it's a super fun time.
Nice. It's like if you're here on the East Coast, you go to like the Jersey Shore.
If
you're in PA or Jersey, if you're in New York, you go to if you have the dollars, you go to the Hamptons. But the Hamptons is expensive. So, nice. Well, let's jump in. I'm gonna do something a little sacrilegious on this podcast for me, but I just opened something. It wasn't a beer though. It was not a beer, Greg. It is called. It is a Lagunitas, which is a brewer hoppy refresher. They have come out with a like hop flavored seltzer water that has zero calories, that tastes way better than any of the non-alcoholic beers I've ever tried. So I have been having these during the week, and I'm trying to cut back on the calories a little bit because they add up. Even though I did just get back, I went on vacation earlier this month, but I went on a little day trip on Friday that I posted to Twitter about that was amazing. Buddy of mine and I got up early. We sent our kids off to daycare, and then we drove 3+ hours north into Massachusetts, went to the greatest brewery in the United States, maybe the world, definitely the best brewery I've ever been to, called Treehouse. They have several locations in Massachusetts. We drove up, we had two beers, we got like 4.5 to 5 cases of beer from them combined and drove home in the same day. And it was glorious.
There you go.
And I have all that in my basement right now, but trying to drop a few pounds here before the football season starts, because we are close now. We are less than a month away before the first Notre Dame game. I'm also running a half marathon in September, so need...
Oh, wow.
I know every pound I lose between now and then, it's just a little bit easier to run without the weight. But these things are not bad. I highly recommend them to anybody who listens, who knows my affinity for beer, knows that recommendation does not come lightly. And they are not sponsoring us at all in any way. Treehouse is not sponsoring us either, even though I gave them a huge shout out. But they're not bad. They're refreshing. And like I said, zero calories. So it's a win.
I've been very into the High Noons this summer.
Oh, okay.
The vodka seltzers.
Those are good.
I love them. There was another brand I had. We went to a pool party on Saturday, and it was, I can't remember what it was, but it's, for me, it's super dangerous because it tasted just like a margarita in a can.
Oh, is it a blue can?
I don't remember. I didn't have too much because I had to drive home.
Okay.
I should have like gotten the can. I mean, I could just text my friend and find out what it was, but I'm telling you, anyone who knows me, like if margaritas are my thing, like you can, like, I don't really care for beer. Margaritas, on the other hand, I can get really saucy on that. So, that's been my thing. So maybe this year I'll open up some cans with you.
Ooh,
it'll be a High Noon.
Okay, now that would be fun. We're definitely gonna need to do that at some point. So when you mentioned it, I know a few months back we were traveling, and I know my wife was getting these like canned margaritas, and it was Cayman Jack was the name of the brand, and I know she loved them. She was like, "These are really good." I don't know if I think I did have one as well, but I don't recall whether or not. I don't really remember if I liked it or didn't like it, but I can tell you it's torture having all those great beers in my basement and trying not to just drink them all right away. However, they're worth it. Anyway, it's a big day for Notre Dame today, too. Big green jersey reveal. I know when I messaged you, it was like, hey, we should talk about players and early fall camp stuff. But then I also forgot today was the big green jersey reveal. Notre Dame media killed it again with the Jerry Maguire style video and hype and lead up. Actually, it's not Notre Dame media's problem. Under Armour and Bookstore not necessarily doing the best of jobs today with making these new jerseys available after announcing them. But what are your thoughts on the green on green that Notre Dame revealed? Earlier today.
My first reaction, I didn't really like the green pants.
Okay.
I was just kind of like, why are we doing green pants? But then I've come around on that. I've completely done like a 180. I like the green pants. I want them to keep the green pants, actually.
Oh, okay.
I want it to be I was talking to the 1 Foot Down guys who are now the Earn 5-Star podcast.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for them, you should find them at that. And I was talking to them about it, and I want it to be part of a rotation. Keep the green pants, because you know how like and I think a number of schools do this, like they have different color pants and they're all part of it. Like Clemson does this.
Yep.
In Miami, my first thought was Miami used to do this, like in the 2001 to kind of 2004, and they probably still do. But since they went with Adidas, it's just not as good. But they had those green pants, they had white pants, they had orange pants, and they were all just part of a rotation, and they would give different like combinations. And I want Notre Dame to do that. You know, have like green, white, gold pants, and you can have the navy, white, green jersey and just kind of rotate it around. I'm really into that. I'm really into that. Like, I would love for them to, you know, have an away game with the white jersey, green number, green pants, you know, go with that. Right. Like, I think that would look really sharp.
That would be awesome.
So I think if they kept them in the rotation, that'd be great. I would never put the green shoes on my feet. It's gotta be, I'm a white shoes guy, just period. Especially playing. So I would wear the white shoes. I don't like green shoes. That is one that I would stay away from. But that kind of has that doesn't really, because the players don't have to, like, they have to wear the green jersey. They have to wear the green pants. They don't have to wear the green shoes. They could wear white if they want. So that's what I would do. But yeah, I would say it's certainly not offensive. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stand out to me as being like gross. Mm-hmm. And so that's fine, right? That's good. By the time the game comes, it's just going to be a please win situation. And I'm obviously not, and they're not going to be like a huge distraction. So I think it's a good thing.
All right. I like them, a lot. I did not think that they would do green on green, but I kind of like them. A little similar to the Green Monster uniforms from 2015. Although those were, you know, a little more stylized, and if I'm not mistaken, they had the blue, they had blue numbers on those, if I remember correctly, the ones they wore in Fenway. And had a little more blue worked into them. I mean, the white with the gold trim on the numbers is sharp. Who was it? There was, he responded that, that designer who had those, he was a graphic designer who did mock-ups, I think it was like a year or two ago, where he had the green jerseys with the white numbers. He responded in the comments, you know, saying there's no balance, where are the gold pants, but, I like them a lot. I think they look great. I like the green shoes quite a bit. I actually sent you a link to some this morning that, I found interesting. And I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but, the green Under Armour shoes,
yeah,
that they released, I don't know, last year or whenever, the latest versions, they're 50% off right now. I will probably be getting a pair later today because I have a pair from like 2018. Yeah, they must be there. It was when I was at the 2018 Michigan game. I remember going into the bookstore and they had like the first green Under Armour shoes that they came out with, and I got them. And now those are, you know, they're 5 years old, so they're falling apart a little bit. But I'm going to replace them with these new ones. But I thought it was interesting. You know, it's rare for the Under Armour stuff to be on 50% off sale, right? We know that, yeah, Notre Dame is in negotiations for the apparel deal, so I don't want to read too much into that. But I thought that was a little interesting. I mean, maybe it's wishful thinking, because I know you specifically from Twitter really want Notre Dame to switch to the switch to Nike. But that was my first thought. I was like, well, what do you do? When does stuff usually go on sale when you're trying to get rid of it? You're trying to liquidate it. So we'll see. Like I said, probably wishful thinking. But I also saw your tweet today, like, hey, they announced all this stuff, but they did not announce a continuation with Under Armour, so the dream still lives.
Yeah, you would think that Under Armour would want that if that's what they were doing, right? Mm-hmm. If they were going to re-up with them, you would think it would be all part of a big package. You would think that what? You would think that they would want the jerseys to be available right away. Everyone can, mm-hmm, buy them. You can't do that. But then, you know, Under Armour isn't really like they're not the most well-run organization. So
yeah,
maybe they do re-up and they just aren't very good at rollouts and that sort of thing. So that's also possible.
Could be. All of the Under Armour Notre Dame shoes on Fanatics and on the official shop right now are on sale, by the way. So the greens are 50% off. The blue version, the navy version, is also 65% off. There's a women's green version, 50% off. And then they have these cool ones too that are like white. So there you go. The white with the gold bottoms, since you like the white shoes, they're on sale. Not as cheap though. They're still $95, but all on sale. Interesting to me. So, I mean, I don't know if there hasn't been a whole lot on that front in terms of when to expect an announcement, but we'll see when that does happen. But the Nike dream still lives, at least for another day. That said, now by the time I edit this, there'll probably be an announcement on which apparel deal Notre Dame is going with, but I digress. You know what, though? There is a lot of news and information on, and that is fall camp 2023. Notre Dame reported to fall camp last week, there's some early buzz, you know, coming out of camp, as you know, as always. It does somewhat feel like there's a little more buzz to me, at least, coming out of fall camp than there was spring, because it seemed like nothing came out of spring ball this year. But what are your kind of early thoughts on, you know, fall camp so far? You know, what are you hearing? You know, what are you going to be looking at over the next, you know, couple of weeks before Notre Dame heads off to Dublin?
I think there's just some things like Chris Tyree, he's going to be a big deal. I mean, I think the last time we talked, I was very bearish on Chris Tyree.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like, this goes back to the spring, I think. And just his role, like I didn't know where he fit with Lorenzo Styles leaving the program. That kind of slot option has gone away. I think with Caleb Smith, the older Caleb Smith leaving the program, that pushes Jaden Thomas out to the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
I think that slot option goes away, and suddenly there's a lot of snaps to be had at the slot. And I think Chris Tyree is going to be there, and I think Jaden Greathouse is going to be there, but I don't think they're going to give too much to Greathouse. I think they probably feel like 60, 70 snaps for Greathouse is probably going to be too many.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that obviously there's going to be a lot of 12 personnel, and the Notre Dame always likes to do the double tight end, so that's going to be a factor. But I think Chris Tyree's going to have a pretty big role there. He's a starting slot right now. And so, you know, you've got Sam Hartman who likes to work the slot. He worked the slot a lot at Wake Forest. Chris Tyree is going to be a big player for Notre Dame this year. So I think that kind of stands out for me. I think Holden Stays is the top tight end right now. So that's interesting to me. Just I see him. I think the receiving upside there is, I think that's something that people aren't really thinking enough about, just in terms of him working the middle of the field. So that stands out to me. Billy Shrouth seems like left guard is going to be, that's his spot. So that's interesting to kind of get there. Jadarian Price, no red jersey. That's big.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Just kind of going through the Rolodex of things. Thomas Harper, probably starting nickel right now. So that's a thing, right? Like that's a good transfer come in.
Yeah.
And then just the kind of the defensive line, how that's all shaking out, like who's running at the ones, you know, kind of those positions and that sort of thing. What is Rover? Like, what does that position even mean in this defense? Is that just a nickel spot now? Like the whole, like they wanted to keep Rover. It seemed like, remember, they wanted to keep Rover because, you know, Prince Colley was coming in. They wanted to get Prince Colley and he wanted to play that Rover spot. And so they kept the name, the Rover. Well, now Prince Colley's not in the program. I don't think Jalen Snead or any of those other guys really care what it's called. So it's a position on the field. So what exactly is that position? So I would say that's probably the things that are sticking out to me at the moment, just kind of like things that you're tracking, that aren't really like who's playing well and that sort of thing. Cause it's kind of hard to, there's a lot of noise. It's kind of hard to know exactly what all that means at the moment.
Yeah. Well, would you agree though? It does seem like there's a little more info at least for there, or, you know, inklings of things already in fall camp than the spring, when it just seemed like there was nothing out there in the spring. And it was just like people were kind of grasping for things, you know, because there was just so little information, you know, available. And it seems like more is, at least maybe it's just leaking out a little more now than it did in the springtime. I mean, yeah, Harper definitely I thought was interesting because it seems like he's running as a backup safety, but the starting nickel. That. Yeah. It just kind of interesting coming in as a, you know, as a transfer. Maybe who knows? Maybe that's what Notre Dame's pitch was to him. Like, hey, we don't know if you're going to be able to start at safety, but we think you could be our starting nickel. I think interesting. One thing I think, you know, too, just in some of the things that you're hearing coming out of it is it seems like a cornerback is just like, went from a couple of years ago being just such a total like liability to all of a sudden it seems like corner is, it might be one of the deepest and most talented positions, you know, on the, at least on the defense, when you're looking at who Notre Dame has lining up, you know, as the ones, and then some of the talent that is, you know, that's kind of, you know, coming in. And, you know, we've talked in other podcasts before about how there's kind of this almost glut of depth, kind of in between where you have, you know, your top liners of Cam Hart, Benjamin Morrison, Jaden Mickey, you know, right now. And then somebody like a Christian Gray, you know, in the freshman class, and you know, and Micah Bell, who it seems like there's some positive, at least inklings of. And then there's a bunch of guys who, you know, came in over the last, like, say, 2 to 3 years, where I think some of that will probably get sorted out as we go through the summer. But it is nice to look at corner and just be like, wow, that position has done a 180 in the last, you know, just the last couple of years. Because remember going through like the 2020, well, class of 21, after the, you know, during the kind of the 2020 season, and just thinking about corner, and Notre Dame loaded up on a bunch of guys in that class. After, you know, Todd Light had a not great end of his run, at least from a recruiting standpoint, as Notre Dame's cornerback coach. So hats off to Mike Mickens. That position just seems like it is in really, really, really good shape. Which is not something we've been able to say at Notre Dame, you know, a whole lot of times. Like, Notre Dame's had some good corners over the years, obviously, you know, Julian Love obviously comes to mind pretty quick, but it's not been a position that, you know, you normally think of as synonymous with like greatness at Notre Dame, like you do offensive line and, you know, even some other positions to a lesser extent, like tight end and whatnot. But that is encouraging. Especially because I think, you know, to your point of like, looks like there's a lot of defensive linemen who are going to be in the rotation. But it's still like, I think that's still probably one of the questions is like, how is that pass rush going to, you know, materialize in the fall? You know, we hear a lot of good things about a lot of individual players, but I think that's still probably one of the things to me that I look at this team and that I'm going to be watching over the next few weeks before the Navy game is how does the pass rush, you know, evolve? Because it was fine last year. Like, it wasn't bad. It wasn't, you know, by any means, it wasn't necessarily, it probably wasn't as good as we could have hoped for either. And then you lose, you know, your best pass rusher, the program's literal, you know, leader in sacks. So, and I think that is, it's something that we're going to just need to, you know, to see how does Viper play out. You know, there's a lot of hope around Jordan Botello that he, you know, puts it all together and has a huge year. But like after him, it seems like there's a number, there's still questions as to like, well, who's the second Viper? It seems like that could be a deep position, but how much do you get out of the second and third guy there? I think is still a question. I think strong side defensive end, you know, we're going to see, you know, how does the depth play out there? And even on the inside, it seems like Riley Mills is now, well, not seems, but I mean, we kind of knew he was going to be defensive tackle, but he is, seems like we won't be seeing him lined up outside, you know, very much at all. Yeah, you know, if at all. So how does the depth, how does that play out there? One guy I'm really interested in, you know, seeing is Jason Onye and what Notre Dame could get from him. And I know a few weeks back, you and I were going back and forth on some players. And he was one that I think you told me that you had some high hopes, for. Because I think I forget how I had sent over a list of players. I'm like, hey, I'm thinking about writing about these guys. And I forget how I had him classified. And you were like, I think you could make him a breakthrough player. So it sounds like you have some hopes, or at least for him. So what do you expect out of him this year?
Out of Onye?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think what I thought, like, I think he's going to be, I think he's going to be in the rotation. I think it'll be, I don't know if they're going to have him at the three or they're going to have him at the one.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, he'll be second there, whether it's to Howard Cross or whether it's to Mills on the three tech. Yep. So I think he's going to be a factor there for sure. He has gone from basically the reason I had him as breakout. It's like he'd go from not playing to being like a regular player, you know, like, maybe not half the snaps, maybe 40% of the snaps, right? Like, that's a huge jump.
Huge jump, yeah.
So that's why I would say that. As far as the corners, I think it's true. I mean, that shows how important it is to hit on, you know, somebody like Ben Morrison, right? Like, that's huge. You're looking at, so the upside with him and Cam Hart, like, I think we all kind of see those guys as like, oh, those are two NFL caliber
yep.
Corners. Cam's upside is so hard to gauge just because of the injuries. Like, we had, I don't know that we've ever seen like the what Cam Hart can actually be.
Yep.
I think we all noticed that Ben Morrison has, you know, at least all American upside, you know, if not trying to guess, I don't want to speculate on how NFL people look at him, because people picked apart Kyle Hamilton, you know, like that's so it's just, who knows what people think about, like people are picking apart Joe Alt right now. So that's another one where
what?
It's like, I don't want to know how to, I don't really care, but he could be an All-American in college. And I think that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And then you look at Jaden Mickey and you look at Christian Gray, who's bigger than Ben Morrison right now. So that's another one. Where's that going? Obviously Clarence Lewis still in the program. You have Chance Tucker, who's been around. So, you know, if he's your sixth guy, that's obviously really good. So,
yeah,
what you said about the corner group, I think that's accurate. You know, a lot of people were fired up about their first practice. I guess they dominated the practice. Something I was thinking about, I didn't bring it up with Jamie, but I was thinking about it kind of a couple of days after, is like, it was all red zone work, and that's going to be very advantageous for DBs. It's not to take anything away from them. Like, you still got to perform, you still got to play well, but you'd much rather be in red zone work, because the routes are cut down. No one can go over the top of you. And the types of routes that they're running are going to be limited because of where they're on the field. Right. And this makes sense, right? Like, anytime the offense gets in the red zone, you think, oh man, it's going to be harder to score because you're condensed in the red zone. Right. So that works out. So obviously a good day for the corners. I'm curious to see how that all plays out once the field gets extended and they're doing more full field stuff. I think and you look at the corners, and then the pass rush is obviously, you know, Jordan Bateljo's, his pass rush rate, his win rate, and his pressure rate, and all those things are kind of astronomical. If he ever got close to, on a full-time basis, if he got close to matching those numbers, he would be a monster. I mean, amongst, you know, some of the best, you know, pass rushing seasons that we've had at Notre Dame recently. But that's obviously an open question. I think behind him is Junior Tulihalamaka, who I don't see being like a great pass rusher. I think he's really good against the run, but is that, you know, how does that play out? Mm-hmm. Obviously, Javonte Jean-Baptiste on the other side. He's a pass rush guy as well. Like, him and Bateljo could be a real, like on third down, those two could be a real formidable duo. And Riley Mills wants to get after the passer too. So there's a lot there, right? There's a lot. You know, they're talking about bringing Marist off the edge sometimes. So there's just a lot to get figured out. There's a lot of unknown, which we don't like. But, you know, there's reason and statistical reason as well for optimism and, you know, to believe that, yeah, they can be a good pass rushing team. You combine it with that secondary, those corners. I think Xavier Watts is starting to do some things in practice, which I'm very excited about. It's good. It's good. It's unknown, but it's a good situation.
You know who would disagree with you that you would rather be in red zone if you're a corner or just on defense at all, is last year's Notre Dame defensive team that gave up scores on 94% of red zone trips. So it's encouraging that that's where they started practice too, because that was just such an Achilles heel of this team last year. It was just like a sinking feeling when Notre Dame let an opponent get into the red zone. It was like they're probably going to score a touchdown, and the numbers back that up. It was 27 out of 34 trips the opponent scored a touchdown, which is just really not very good. That is something that they obviously need to correct this year. And so it's good that they were started there, in camp. 'Cause it was almost inexplicable last year. Just like, I remember, you know, early in the year, it was like, they can't keep giving up touchdowns at this rate. It's going to normalize. It never normalized. It was just like week after week, like they got to the red zone, and for whatever reason, whether it was scheme or just execution, it did not work out well for the Notre Dame defense, which on that note, it was encouraging to hear Al Golden say too, like, hey, we didn't add a whole lot in the offseason, but we got rid of a whole lot that we went back and looked at and said that, you know, it wasn't working. Obviously, you think like, oh, well, that makes sense. But it's refreshing to hear at times because, there's a lot of egos involved and things like that in coaching, and not all coaches are willing to, to admit that. Some are like, oh, no, we didn't execute it right. So we're just going to keep practicing it till you execute it right. It's like, well, no, if it didn't work, it didn't work. So I was actually really happy to hear Al Golden say that they scrapped a lot because there was definitely things. I mean, everybody goes back to, the safety blitz in the red zone because it happened in some pretty key areas. But obviously there were other challenges with the defense if they, in terms of scheme, if opponents were scoring at the rate that they were, last year. So that's got to be, something that they fix, and need to see major improvement, in that regard this year. I think if Notre Dame really wants to have the kind of season that everyone's hoping that they, that they can have, that's got to be one of the biggest areas of improvement for the, for the Notre Dame defense. Yes, you touched on a couple other players there, too, that I think are interesting. We talked about the receivers a little bit. I'm just trying to think, when was the last time, if ever? Well, actually, I think I could kind of come up with one. Let's see if you have the same idea. When was the last time that Notre Dame had a receiving core that seemed to have as much potential and as high of a ceiling as this one, with actually very little production?
A very little production?
Yeah.
Receiving core with some, I mean, probably 2016.
Okay.
They had EQ.
That's true.
They had Stefferson, freshman. They had Torrey Hunter, who had done some stuff in 15, but not really.
Yeah.
And then you had, let's see, CJ Sanders. Who else? I'm just trying to remember. So that group, right?
I was thinking 14. But 16 is probably more because you had Fuller, who hadn't, what do you have, like four catches or whatever?
Yeah, he hadn't done much. I mean, Corey Robinson.
He had a few catches as a freshman.
They moved Amir Carlisle, who's kind of like the Tyree thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think
Procise moved to receiver that, or he had moved to receiver, but that was the year that he, had like 600-700 yards out of nowhere. 14's
good. I think 16 is also kind of good.
Yeah.
Because I think, 16 has that, because Jaden Thomas, that there's no real comp for Jaden Thomas on the 2014 team. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I think a 16 with Torrey Hunter, mm-hmm. Cause he had done a little bit in 15.
Yeah.
So I would say that, and I think that group, 14 and 16, they both worked out pretty good, right? Like,
yeah.
EQ was a good player. Torrey Hunter got hurt, so that's kind of a bummer, right? But Kevin Stefferson was good.
Yep.
People equate the record. Yeah. And 14 as well. Like, Fuller obviously went off. Carlisle had a good year. Chris Brown had a good year, So, there's some good outcomes there. CJ Procise had a good year in 14. So, I think, especially paired with the quarterback, right? I mean, the quarterback is a huge part of, their success and how successful they can be. He's Sam Hartman's really good. He knows how to sling it. He knows how to throw guys open. He knows how to take chances. He'll give them chances, opportunities to make plays. So, I think that's a big part of it.
I am very bullish on the receivers this year. I feel like they have a chance to just be really, really good.
Yeah.
I think it's an exciting group. It's one that, like I said, it's a lot of projection right now, just cause Merriweather had the one catch. You got some of the freshmen coming in who, looks like they could play, maybe not a ton, but, we already talked about Chris Tyree and what he could potentially do. So he could almost be, Tyree could kind of be like that 14 version of Procise that just, switched. Well, he switched from safety initially and then had like a year, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't he have a year on offense, like kind of a transition year? And then he exploded and then he moved to running back full time in 15.
I don't remember him playing receiver in 13.
Was he just on defense both years and just didn't play that much?
Yeah.
Okay. So they still have that, like, that kind of comp. And I mean, I think the fact that you have, like you said, Hartman throwing to them is what really gives that group like a ton of potential. Like, if Notre Dame didn't have Sam Hartman and we were coming into this year with, say, if it wasn't Hartman, you know, you're probably what would have come into this year with Pine and Buckner again, right? Like, I don't think I would have nearly the level of optimism that I do about this group. Because they would just, they wouldn't have somebody getting them the ball as consistently as Hartman, I think, is going to. Or as we all
think. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a huge part of it, right?
Yeah.
That's a huge part of why everyone feels the way that they feel.
Well, it's also the talent is there, right? And it's like, it's receivers, one of those positions that, especially in college, I think, if you can have a talented wide receiver group, and if you don't have a quarterback who can get them the ball, you know, like Hartman, mm-hmm. Well, then it doesn't really matter. Like, if Notre Dame had Sam Hartman last year, I think that the wide receiver group wouldn't be coming into this year with very little production. They would have much more production. You would have had a lot more out of, you know, at a number of those, the receivers, but it's, you know, it's, they had what they had. So, so anyway, that position, I just think, the more we see, I mean, everybody saw the Jaden Thomas catch on the sideline that, that got tweeted out, I think over the weekend, that originally was on like Thomas's Instagram feed or something like that, mm-hmm. where he toe taps on the sideline. And there's a question about that. So we'll get to it in a little bit, but, it's also just, I think it's one of the first times in a while the wide receiver group is just so complementary of each other. There's not a lot of guys who all can do the same thing. That hasn't been the case, you know, in recent years. There's been times where you're like, well, Notre Dame's starting these three receivers because they're the best three receivers, even though they're not necessarily, you know, playing the best positions. It's like, man, maybe all three of them should be playing the same position, but this is who they're starting. I mean, it just seems like they all are very, very well suited for the roles that they're going to play. Again, novel idea, but when you have misses in recruiting, and you're just taking, you know, you're taking numbers at times, that's, you get into positions like Notre Dame has been in the past. Whereas now, you know, Chancey Stuckey has just done a freaking awesome job of, again, rebuilding that room in a hurry. Similar, you know, I mean, Mickens has been here longer, but those are two positions that have not always been strengths. There's been times, you know, over the last 10, 12 years where Notre Dame has had like singular good receivers, like some singularly great receivers at times. But it's been rare, I think, for Notre Dame to have a really complementary group of receivers like they have right now. Cause like, even when you think back, like when they had Claypool and Boykin at the same time, it's like those guys kind of needed to play the same position to an extent. So it's like you had guys who were kind of similar in skill set out there at the, you know, at the same time. I mean, think back to the 20 team when you had Skoranek and McKinley out there. Again, not necessarily super complementary skills, more like, hey, these guys are great, so we're going to put them out there, or our best guys, but they were still very similar. Whereas now you look at what Tyree can do versus what Thomas can do versus what Tobias Merriweather can do, all very different. And that's exciting. And I think that's something that Notre Dame is going to take advantage of a lot.
I mean, I would point out that these are all Dell players.
Yeah.
So, and it's same with Colsey. I mean, Tyree is not, but he's no one, you know, he's
true
credit to,
but I, Lance even still, Taylor, like, I guess. The freshman coming in, you know, pressing them. Well, again, I'm still giving Stuckey credit for some of this. We can give Dell some credit as well, but
I'm just pointing it out.
I know.
Like, I do think, but I, you know, I mean, obviously, like I think Greathouse and I think Greathouse and
he's gonna play.
And Oh, yeah, for sure. He absolutely is. I think Great House and Flores are kind of the same guy. But it's fine. Like, I think, kind of maybe a better way to put it is, you know, I think we have more, I think we have more faith that, you know, Tobias is going to, you know, mature and develop quicker than maybe he would have under Dell. And same thing with Jaden Greathouse. You know, would Chris Tyree be able to transition to the slot as seamlessly? Well, I don't want to say seamlessly. Like, we have confidence in him doing that. Would that happen with Dell? We don't know. So I think that's kind of how – I think that's a better way to put it and a better way to think of it. I mean, obviously, I mean, you could just – you could look at who Notre Dame has coming in, you know, in the 24 class with Cam Williams, Micah Gilbert, and Logan Saldate, or Saldate, I should say. Like, those guys are different as well. So you can, you know, that's a good mark on that front. But yeah, but again, the quarterback, like, makes a huge difference in this, you know, and I think it would be hard. Like, look, I think it helps, you know, I think it really helped the 18 team that, I mean, just look at the difference in how we felt about Notre Dame's wide receivers through the first four games. And then once Ian Book came, you know, and all of a sudden there's a quarterback who can actually get these guys the ball. I mean, what did Chase Claypool do on offense against Michigan, Vanderbilt, and Ball State?
Well, nobody did anything against Ball State or Vanderbilt.
Like, no one's doing anything, right? Like Boykin had a long catch. You know, obviously, Chris Fink had a long catch, and he made some plays. But, like, other than that, there was nothing going.
Right.
And then suddenly, Ian Book comes, and, oh, we can, like, do stuff. That's great. You know, and those guys get propelled into good seasons. Boykin, you know, goes on in the NFL and that sort of thing. That's not happening if Brandon Wimbush remains at quarterback, right? So I think that just kind of shows, like, you can get a change at quarterback and suddenly, you know, a group can be transformed, right? And I think that's what we'll see this year. Obviously, like, Drew Pine, and, you know, there's games when Notre Dame doesn't want to throw the ball. Against Clemson, they refuse to throw. I mean, they call the pass, and Drew Pine looks to the sideline acting like, you really want me to throw? I mean, like, that's a thing that happened in 2023, is Notre Dame's quarterback looked to the sideline because he didn't understand that they wanted him to throw a pass.
Yeah.
So that's, like, it's going to be different. And so I think that a lot of people have been, like, pooping on Notre Dame's wide receivers. And when I say a lot of people, I mean the national media. Like, they've been pooping on Notre Dame's wide receivers. Things can change really quickly when you've got a real dude at the quarterback position.
Yeah. Exciting times on offense, at least. Think defense, we'll see, coming along. But I still feels like this can be, I mean, we're putting a lot of, at least I'm putting a lot of eggs in the Sam Hartman basket here, but it just seems like this could be a really, really good offense. And hopefully we have the defense that can complement it, because the times that Notre Dame's had a great offense in the last 10 years, when you think about it, it's been rare for them to also have a kind of complementary defense. Because even still, you look at, like, the 18 team, it was a good offense, but I don't know that I would say 18 was necessarily, like, great. Whereas that 17 offense, you know, it was just rushing for 300 yards at times, and you had Josh Adams and all that, you know, going on. And even that team, you still had trouble, you know, throwing the ball. So it'd be tough to call that, you know, a great offense. I mean, 15 was pretty good, you know, once Kizer came in and, you know, just came out of nowhere to start leading that offense. But that year, there was no defense because Brian Van Goiter was there. And there's the Brian Van Goiter reference for this podcast. Look at that. Even with 5-6 weeks off, not rusty in the Brian Van Goiter references. Still slide them in. But we'll see. I think I'm getting pretty excited. just overall about the offense, you even look at the running backs we didn't really talk about, but you mentioned Jadarian Price earlier, but that group looks like, again, it's going to be a lot of fun between Estime and Price and Jeremiah Love coming in, and there being some buzz around him, and then Devin Ford, I'm assuming he's going to have some kind of role, because I can't imagine why he would have transferred in unless that, something was carved out, or, at least in his mind, saw the opportunity there. So that's a fun group, to watch too. But you know what? Even with me really slacking on getting questions out, Greg, I tweeted it out throughout the bat signal. I tagged some of our favorites who always ask questions, and they did not disappoint. So we got a decent number of questions, despite the fact that I think this got sent out very, very late. And I know we don't have a ton of time because you got baby duty going on today and whatnot. So why don't we jump into questions?
Let's do it.
All right. First question is from Robert Helicki. It's multi-parter, but it says, well, what do you think of the Green Uni? Obviously, we talked about that, quite a bit. He says he thinks that Notre Dame killed it. Next part is for me, and this one's bittersweet. But he says, how do you feel about sharing a birthday with Dak Prescott and Sam Hartman? So I had a birthday over the weekend, and I did not realize that I shared a birthday with the starting quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. So that was a bummer. That was a little bit of a rain cloud on my birthday. The Phillies forgetting how to play baseball over the weekend while I was, watching the games, also a bit of a bummer. But the saving grace there is I also share a birthday with Sam Hartman. Who knew? I believe he's 17 years younger than I. However, that part's fun. So, I think you got to take the good with the bad. But his last part is for you. It says, Greg, doesn't JT's sideline catch give you peak Claypool vibes?
It definitely gives me peak number one wide receiver vibes.
Oh,
I don't know about Claypool per se, but it's just, that looks like a dude.
It does.
That looks like a dude. And it's funny, like how a difference a year makes, right? Like we all got excited about him because he had a nice end around in the spring game. And now he's like catching whole shots, like getting his toest of toes down.
Yep.
While landing and catching the ball, the first thing I thought when I saw that was, man, that's a hard landing. I do not like that. But yeah, man, that's a big time play.
That is a big
time play. There's no other way to see it. So it's good stuff.
Yes, and I think it all goes back to why it's pretty easy to be getting excited about the Notre Dame offense, right now. So next question is from Chris Shiver. After five practices, first guess at the over-under of freshmen that will use their red shirt. He's saying the line is set at 9.5. Oh, I am going to say under.
That's a big number.
Yeah, I think that 9.5 is a lot.
9.5 is a good amount. Well, let's see here, okay? Let's see. I think Jeremiah Love is one. I'll just say who I think.
Yep.
Jeremiah Love is one.
Agreed. Drake
Bowen, two.
Agreed.
Great House, three. Osbury, four.
Okay. That's a good one.
I'll say Christian Gray, five.
Okay. Any other receivers? You think Flores or Braylon James?
I don't think Braylon James. Flores? It's tough. Let's think here. Who's playing behind Tobias to the field? So maybe yes, Flores. Yeah. I think he would play ahead of Braylon James. I could be wrong about this.
Okay, so let's say one of the two. That gives
Let's say one of those two. Yeah, I think someone has to be the backup there. So what does that make? Six?
Yep. He lists. Oh, I didn't realize he lists who he has.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Did I say Christian Gray yet?
Yes.
Yes. Did I say, and we said Osbury?
Yes.
I think that's it.
So interesting. So Chris is pretty close. He has Vernon, Gray, Osbury, James, Greathouse, Flores, Love, and Bell. Oh, and Bowen. I skipped over Bowen.
And Bowen. I don't think Bell, just because he's a slot guy. I mean, unless he's like the kick returner, in which case he definitely will. But I don't think he would. I don't think he'll be that. I think that I don't think they'll get him in there enough to burn four. Brendan Vernon is another one. Like he's behind a lot of people. And so he's not going to be inside. I mean, maybe there's a couple blowouts. The only thing with the wideouts is like I could see all three freshmen burning it if they blow out enough teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I could see that. Because the other thing is like it's hard to get guys to stay for 5 years, so just get them out there.
Yeah.
Especially offensive players. So it's I might see that. So I could see seven. If you set it at like, if you set the number at like 6.5, that would be really tough for me. 9.5, I don't
under. Know. Yeah, I would go under.
That's tough.
All right. Next question is from Andrew Callen. He says, estimate for strength and conditioning coach, yay or nay, which actually we didn't even touch on Bayless leaving. A lot happens, in a week, and it feels like, that feels like it happened longer ago than that, but that was a big blow, man. And I know you guys talked about it on Hit and Hustle. And I think you, if I'm not mistaken, you guys were like mid recording when that broke, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, hello, that probably changed, all you guys had planned for that day, but, that is a bummer, man. Like that to quote the dude, himself, but, I mean, obviously no one really saw that coming. And I know Freeman talked about it a little bit at his opening press conference, but, that's one of those ones that I don't necessarily know if it has an impact this year. But that's one that, like, if they don't get that hiring right, that can impact the future. Because a lot of what, Bayless did and why he was so, great at what he did was creating that culture that happened through the offseason when he's the one, working with them, when the coaches, can't necessarily, given the NCAA rules and all of that, be the ones, driving it. So that culture was really driven, by Matt Bayless. And, at this point, I think, you're far enough into it that I don't know that, it's going to have any sort of marginal impact on the season, but moving forward, that is a big blow. To the point, where Andrew was going with this question, though, he says, is his physique sufficiently scary to make you pity the fool who have to tackle him yet? I think it was. I don't know that he ever wasn't scary to tackle. Like even when you saw the high school film, it's like, this is a kid in high school. Lord, he looks like he's ready for the NFL draft, not, to report to freshman camp.
He was my least favorite type of player to play against.
Yeah.
Because he'll just come at you.
Yeah.
And in the back, it's terrible. Cause you just have to take it. Like on your face or on your shoulder or something.
Hope for the best. Yeah. You getting run over by him is probably like a win if you're a defensive back.
Well, those are the ones.
As long as he goes to the ground.
Yeah. But those are the ones that hurt,
Yeah. That's what
those
I mean.
Those are the ones that really hurt.
Like him falling flat on you and like pancaking you is would be considered a win for a defensive back. Cause he's just such a freaking monster. So now, you know what? I don't pity anybody that has to, because I want all of Notre Dame's opponents to feel pain. So no, I don't pity them at all. Not one bit. he says, what's your prediction for his output this season? His prediction is pain. But what do you think? Because I actually wrote an article maybe like 2 weeks ago about SMA where I was trying to project out what I thought he could do this year. But what type of output do you see coming from him this year?
Well, I think he's going to have about 220 carries. So probably 1,200, 1,300 yards.
That's around, I think, kind of where I was thinking his season would be. And how many touchdowns?
Between probably 10 and 15.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do in the red zone this year. Like, man, I talked about like being a little worried about the defense in the red zone. But like when you have Hartman and you have a back like Estime, that even last year when you knew Notre Dame was going to run it and you knew they didn't necessarily have great play coming out of the quarterback position, now you have the threat of, you know, the ACC's all-time leading touchdown thrower, you know, in there. And you have to account for this monster of a human being. Like that is going to be, that's going to be fun as a Notre Dame fan of what, you know, what they're going to be able to do there. But that said, I think in that same article wrote, like, I'm going to be interested to see, you know, what do they do play call wise? Do they still lean on the run? Cause that's the identity, or do you play off the opponent's, you know, fear and, over adjustment to trying to stop a back like Estime and put the ball in the hands of a quarterback like Hartman that you should be able to trust completely. So, these are all fun problems to try to be solved.
Yeah.
Solve right now for Notre Dame. Yeah. Hats off to Estime's, you know, acting skills in the video that Notre Dame released too, because he is a character. He is a fun one. And I like, the other thing I think is if he does have a 1,200 to 1,300 yard season and, you know, 10 to 15 touchdowns, like he will be running in the NFL next year, not at Notre Dame, because you can't teach his physique. And if he has that kind of monster season, even with the running back position being undervalued in the NFL, as we're seeing right now with what's going on with all the top backs, like there'd be almost no reason for him to return. So I think he's in line for a big year. Three more questions we got. Clutch Sports Notre Dame says, this push by the recruits on social media is awesome. What kind of impact do you think that will have on uncommitted recruits / future targets?
I mean, it only helps, right? Like it can't, it's not a negative, right? I think it's just kind of like give positive vibes. Yeah. You know, it's give positive vibes towards the university, and however that, whatever comes from that, comes from that. You know, it's just a part of giving them just kind of like, yeah, Notre Dame, I like that.
It's all part of the culture. Notre Dame.
Yeah, like I like that. I like what Notre Dame did there. I'm going to visit there. I want to see what that's about, you know, and it's all about getting guys on campus. Guys on campus, then it's about other things, but it's kind of like that. Yeah, I like Notre Dame. I like what they're doing. I'm gonna visit. I'm gonna go see Notre Dame.
I think that's pretty accurate, and I think that is like that's why it's also like. I mean, I don't think no matter what you know the recruits kind of do, I don't necessarily think it's going to have an impact on someone signing with Notre Dame or not. I mean, look at last year. You know, Peyton Bowen was in the Notre Dame text group active up until when? Like the day before, you know what I mean? The day before he did his flip-flop or whatever it was, like right up until the end. And it's like, you know, that culture was there last year already too. And it's not what ultimately got somebody like Peyton Bowen to sign or not sign, you know, with Notre Dame. But I do think it can be something that Notre Dame uses kind of like early in, you know, recruiting more to your point. Maybe they get somebody to visit who wasn't going to visit, you know, or maybe they get two or three, you know, and then it's like once you get them on campus for a visit, then it's all bets are off. And I think then the rest of your recruiting machine kind of has to kick in. But I don't necessarily think, it's going to be like, yeah, I signed with Notre Dame because, you know, all the other recruits were cool. I mean, I think maybe it helps fend off some poaching that might have otherwise happened. But yeah, it's your point. I think it's all very positive. It's what you want to see. It's what Notre Dame's trying to sell. Like, hey, we're not just an NIL shop like other schools. If that's what you're looking for, you know, cool, but we're not the place for you. You want to come to some place that's going to develop you for your future, whether that's football or not, and be part of this culture that we're building, then this is the place for you. So I think it all works together. Also asks, has Sam Hartman stolen your heart, or does he have to win the big games to do that? I don't know if he's stolen my heart yet, but I will say I don't think he necessarily has to, you know, win the big games, because it's not all on him. At the end of the day, I mean, I think, you know, you look at some of the teams Notre Dame's going to have to play this year, and like, yes, Sam Hartman's going to have big games against Ohio State. He's going to have big games against USC for Notre Dame to score enough points to win those games. But I mean, I think ultimately those games will also come down to the defense getting just enough stops for Notre Dame, to win. So I don't know that I would necessarily say he's got to win the big game, you know, to quote unquote steal my heart here yet. I think you've already heard me kind of gush a little bit about like how excited I am for the offense specifically, because they got a quarterback like Hartman, running it.
Yeah, I mean, stolen my heart. Like he's a good. I mean, I hope he has a good year. Like I. Still in my, he chose Notre Dame. So yeah. That's good. I like that he did that. He's Notre Dame's quarterback. He's just like anybody else, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously if he wins the big games, then people will feel very strongly about him. If he doesn't, then people will feel like he was a bust and it didn't work out. And such is the way it goes for a Notre Dame football player, you know? Unfortunately, but you know, he chose Notre Dame. There's nothing but positive vibes for Sam Hartman. He could have gone anywhere. Positive vibes from me.
All right, last couple here. We got one from Kenny at K. It's K and then E:\n. Who I know is also a Philly sports fan. So thank you for the question, Kenny. Yeah. Biggest freshman impact, says secondary is the strongest Notre Dame unit in years. What are you expecting with the pass rush? I mean, I think we covered off on the second half of that, you know, pretty well already. We talked about the freshman, but we didn't say who we think the biggest impact. Who do you think biggest impact offense and defense will be?
I think it'll be Greathouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to be good.
It's gonna be him or Love, I think, on offense. And then what about defense?
I don't think Greathouse has the. I don't think he has the barriers to entry.
True.
You know, he's gonna be in the rotation. You don't know that Jeremiah Love will. We just don't know. Defense, you know, I think it's gonna be Drake Bowen.
All right. I hope so.
That kid is just good at everything. He is not. How do I say this? Like, he's no pomp and circumstance. He's just, get me out there and I'm going to go play. He's not like a flashy guy. He doesn't need anything. He's just no BS. You know, he just, yeah, let's go. You know, whatever. I'll go play and I'll go make plays. He's just good. He's always been good at everything. Mm-hmm. You go back, you great baseball player, great football player, you know, offense and defense, good running back, good linebacker, good everything. And then you look at his brother, same thing, his younger brother, baller. Like, I just think he's the kind of kid, if he comes out and like starts as a freshman, I don't think he'd be all impressed with himself. It's just like, yeah, I'm a player. He's not going to start, I don't think, barring injury, but I just think he expects a lot of himself, as a matter of fact. And so I just think that kind of person always does really well at Notre Dame. The chances of him like busting to me are just non-existent. None percent. So
love it.
I think he's going to be good.
I think, yes, have some. To quote one of my one of the guys on my team at work who loves to quote the Rick Moranis, I think it was Ghostbusters, where he says, "Yes, have some." So yes, we would like that. Andrew Callen had a post bet addendum to that question. It says Jordan Botello 2023, more sacks or penalties? I hope it's
sacks. I mean, what penalty did Jordan Botello have last year?
I know he's got this reputation though.
Like, I think it's unfounded.
Yes. But it's still a funny question. All right. Last question that we got is from Woj at Woj to God says Ohio State, USC, Clemson. Which one is the most must win of the three? Oh,
Ohio State.
Interesting. Okay. I would say USC just because I don't want to lose to USC again. I don't like USC being good at football again. I thought you would say USC given your surroundings and, you know, the fact that you have to deal with USC fans. I mean, I get Ohio State. It's just because, like, they've had Notre Dame's number now for what? I mean, our lifetimes.
Our lifetime. They have not beaten Ohio State since I've been a fan of theirs.
Correct. That is true. These are true things. The thing about SC and the reason I would say it's more must win is just because, like, I mean, last year was annoying because, you know, you just had Caleb Williams going God mode on Notre Dame and Notre Dame's offense not being able to keep up. And, you know, that was a winnable game. And then you saw what Utah did to USC, and you're like, well, Notre Dame should have been able to do that to them too. And the reason I say that is just because, again, I don't like this scenario where it's like USC was bad for like a decade, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, now they go into the transfer portal and they pay $1 billion for a coach, and they, you know, they go and it's like, well, now they're good again. I don't like that. I don't like that world. So that's why I say USC. I could see the Ohio State angle though too, just because, you know, again, they haven't beaten them in most of our lifetimes. Most of the people listening to this podcast have probably never seen Notre Dame beat Ohio State. That's not fun. So I get that. And obviously Clemson, we just beat the crap out of last year. So that was fun. I would like to see that happen in the SC game this year. I don't think it's possible, but I would love to see that happen.
Yeah.
And then the last addendum here from Andrew Callen says, building on that question, how many games has Notre Dame lost when Greg is in the press box?
One.
One. Okay. Wait, which one did they lose that you were in the press box for?
I was in the press box for USC last year.
Oh, that's right. I think he's thinking home games. Because then he says,
zero home games.
There we go. So zero home games. Because then he says, what do we have to do to get Greg in the press box for Ohio State and USC? Make it happen, Greg. We need to make it happen.
What do we have to do? So I'll drop my Venmo in the comments and you guys can send me money. That's,
you know what? Don't you do it. That would probably get some traction. But and at the buzzer, Chris Jenkins, always appreciate Chris, came in with a question. Says, so with less than 4 weeks till Navy, what are the early predictions? He's going Notre Dame 45, Navy 10. 10 comes against the backups. I think that's a good score, actually.
Sure.
Around probably what I would have said, too, because I think there'll be some rust. Notre Dame will hit some big plays. They'll run the ball a lot. Navy's going to do Navy things, limit possessions, and then, they'll score late, as long as it's not like last year. Thoughts on hits and misses of the recruiting class so far? Loaded question, and I know we don't have a ton of time, so I guess get your 10,000-foot view of that one.
I think getting KVA was huge, it was very big. Matt put in a prediction for Gerby Lambert to Notre Dame yesterday.
I saw that.
So that's important. Mm-hmm. As far as the, I don't know, they have CJ Carr, they have Cam Williams. I think corner is probably one where it's like, you wish you landed Caleb Beasley. Safety is another one where you're just kind of like, boy, you're really hoping for some hits there.
Yeah.
But, you know, beyond that, I mean, I think you've got, I like the running backs. I think you've got a top, you know, the top two wideouts are really good. Cam Williams, I think, is a stud. You got your quarterback. You know, you got some D-line guys. You got a lot of D-line guys with upside. You didn't get Justin Scott. But that's, you know, I don't know. Jamie's not super high on him. I mean, yeah. I should say not as super high as everybody else.
Right.
So, but I think getting KVA is huge. I mean, it's very big. So, you know, obviously, you know, everyone wants more highly ranked recruits, but just generally speaking, I think it's not as bad as it looked, as it could have been. So yeah, I mean, just onward and upward with that stuff.
There's still time to flip. You know, flip season is still coming upon us. So,
but it still happened, and that's why, you know, beat Ohio State. And that's
exactly. That's there you go. All right, you've won me over. I'm saying Ohio State now. last question, part of Chris's question is, where are you watching the Navy game? He says, home, bar, friend's house, et cetera, et cetera. I'm probably gonna watch at home.
Yeah, I'll be at home. I got to do the post game show. We got to do our hit and hustle afterwards.
So I'll be at home, and I got enough Treehouse beer that I'm still going to have beer for that game in 4 weeks. It's going to be lovely. So cool. that is where I shall be, you know, as I take that one in. That was all the questions. I'm not going to lie. I'm very impressed with all the questions that we got in the little time that I posted that ahead of time. So thank you all for the questions. That was awesome. As always, we appreciate you. I'm not even going to make a prediction as to when we're going to pod next, because every time we do this, I'm like, maybe it'll be next week, and then we talk in like a month. So
yeah,
I have a feeling it'll be sooner than a month, but hey, we'll see. But it was fun catching up, Greg, as always.
For sure, bro.
All right. With that, we're going to say, you know, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for the questions. As always, go Irish, and hey, we got less than four weeks to go until the season. So the long national nightmare known as summer is almost over, folks. We'll be there soon, and we'll be in football season. Go Irish.